for coming. We'll go ahead and dive in on this year's budget. I'm very pleased to present to you the FY 2015 proposed operating budget for the City of Columbia. We did something a little different this year. We started the year with a council retreat, which really focused on the budget. And so we took the guidance and the goals that the council communicated with us and really incorporated that in the beginning of our process rather than the middle, which is how it's kind of worked before. I feel like that has resulted in a more responsive budget than we've had before, and you'll see what I mean as we move through. We also continue the practice of filtering this budget through the lens of the strategic plan, and so you'll see that as we move forward too. The council established 7 strategic priorities, and the budget is really wrapped around how to accomplish those priorities. I guess if I would have to characterize this budget as it's related to all the other budgets we have, and over time, this really is a watershed year. It's a pivotal year for the city government as we recover from the recession. And that's really how I think about this budget, recovery. So it's getting better. The budget at a glance, here's what I'm talking about. We have a total estimated spend of $428 million, really $429, and a recommended total revenue of $399 million. So there's a gap there, and that's spending more than we bring in. But almost all of that, all but $900,000 of that, is in utilities and other enterprise funds. And those are designed to operate that way, where they build up funds over time and then spend them down on projects. So it's okay if you spend more than you bring in when you have a big savings account. And that's how we do a lot of utilities. So in the general fund, we'll spend the $900,000 on pensions, actually. And that's a decision the council made 2 years ago as a approach to dig out of the big pension problem we had. And that is showing benefit. It is working. I'm proud to announce that we have our second year of improvement. It used to cost over $1 million. It was $100,000 more expensive last year than it is this year. So it's headed the right direction. We are adding 55 jobs to this budget, and that might seem like a big number, but really it's related primarily to the Affordable Health Care Act and a lot of utility and transportation jobs. So we have a total now, if this budget is approved, of 1,440 total employees, and you can see where that tracks over time, this chart on the screen. We have about 12.06 employees per 1,000 population, and that's actually lower than it was in 05. It's lower than it was in 09. And you can see the impact of the recession there, the 10 through 14. So we're not even back to where we were before the recession, but we are moving toward a higher degree of health when it comes to the service levels we provide. So the challenges we have, I'm going to talk about what we had to grapple with when we made this budget and then what we're doing about it, how we're going to respond to those challenges. One of our biggest issues is that we rely heavily on sales tax. We receive 5 times more sales tax than we do property tax, and that has some pros and cons. It does tend to grow slowly over time. That's a good thing. But when it doesn't, it's a very volatile tax. And in a recession, you can actually lose a significant amount of revenue very quickly and have to respond by usually laying off staff. So it's an exposure we have to a volatile revenue source. Our property tax is one of the lowest in the state. In fact, we can only find 3 or 4 cities that charge less than we do in property tax. If we charged the average of Boone County cities, we'd have to double our property tax to do that. So we are, I would say, a little out of whack in our portfolio of revenue. We heavily emphasize sales tax over property tax. Now, why is that a bad thing? Because we love to shop online. I'm sure everybody's done that. I do it. And while it's convenient, it shortchanges the community because that 2% we would normally send to the city government for police and fire and roads doesn't come. In fact, we are bringing in 15% less per capita than we were 10 years ago in the sales tax, even though it has grown. So moving forward from the recession, we have to make choices about how we change our model. I don't think the internet's going to go away. I don't think people will stop shopping online. And so we don't want to have a MoDOT scenario where our funding source hasn't changed. The earth moves, life changes, and we are left behind and not being able to accomplish our mission because the world changed and we didn't keep up. So there is a backlog of service and infrastructure needs from the recession. The city government made a conscious choice not to put ballots out there during the recession. We chose to take it easy on the taxpayer. Now, in hindsight, we were the only taxing body that did that, and it may have been short-sighted. We don't know. All of the other taxing bodies were successful in that period in passing ballots, so maybe the recession didn't impact that as much as we feared. But we did make the choice to postpone asking for tax renewals and increases ourselves. So there is a backlog of projects and operating service impacts. And so that's going to define us as we move forward. We're going to have to catch up with that work, and we're going to have to ask for some ballot initiatives. We'll get to that in a minute. Another issue I want to highlight as a challenge is the solid waste budget. It is in jeopardy. I raised the flag last year to say we're going to have to do something this year. That utility does spend more than it brings in. Costs have risen. And the way we collect the garbage is probably the most expensive way you can do it. So we do have some recommendations to control that cost this year without doing roll carts. We know that there is a small group that's passionately opposed to roll carts. So we do have some things we can do to push this out a couple of years. At some point, we will have to make a choice between higher rates or less expensive methods of collecting the garbage. So, and lastly, the Affordable Care Act really is a challenge for us. It's a challenge because it increased our cost to provide health care. We had to provide health care to temporary employees that we didn't before. Now, of course, we feel like that's a good thing. It is a negative on the cost side, but it's a positive on the human side. So we chose to embrace this as an opportunity rather than simply a cost, and that's one reason we're adding 55 jobs. We're taking those temporary employees, and rather than just adding the health care benefit, we're making them full-time. That way we both benefit. The service lines they work for get full-time employees, and then those employees get real benefits. So those are the challenges. These, we're going to move into how we're reacting, what we're proposing to address those challenges. We are going to seek voter approval over the next fiscal year. That's two calendar years. I have to remind everyone. So two calendar years, we're going to ask for five ballots. And so we'll walk through them. The two that are most pressing and most immediate, police and fire staff, because of the recession, because of online sales, we are 30% underfunded across the entire organization. And that's true in police and fire, as well as IT and HR and finance and CMO. So as we think about how do we address that issue, asking for more sales tax seems like head in the sand thinking. If we know it's got diminishing returns, we probably need a more solid funding source for those critical services. So the council has been working diligently on this problem, and on their next agenda, they will have the opportunity to vote on whether or not to place a ballot item on the election schedule for November that would add 30 police officers, 15 firefighters, and also pay for all of the equipment those people would need, the apparatus, the vehicles, the uniforms. To do that, we're suggesting a 5-year property tax increase, phased in over 5 years, so 6 cents per year, and for a total increase of 30 cents. We charge 41 cents now, which again is half of the average in Boone County, and it's lower than that for the rest of Missouri. So that gives you a sense of how much the increase is. We wouldn't, even with this increase, we wouldn't even get to average in Boone County. And it equates to a little under $8 a month after all 5 years is done and you're charging the full cost. So it's $8 per month per household. The second ballot is a development fee, and this is really a method to pay for roads. It's a fee on new construction paid by those who purchase that construction and paid by developers initially, the folks making the investment and building it. It's a tiered approach to kind of balance the cost of the new development, the new infrastructure, the new community-wide infrastructure that results as a result of that development, and the infrastructure use. So it tries to, this is a real model change about how we pay. It's not just a flat tax for a road. It really tries to equate how much use gets applied to the road with who pays. Those are the two in November. Moving into next year, 2015, we'll be asking for voter approval for the electric needs we have. This is the transmission project on the south and west side of the community. It would really modernize our infrastructure in that regard. We have to do this work due to regulatory requirements. And so in this scenario, we have to pay for it one way or another. The ballot is the cheapest way to do it. And by ballot, I mean debt, you know, borrowing the money to pay for it. So we're going to propose that we do that to have the lowest rate impact on electric. And then at the same time, we're going to be looking at what we do about the flooding issues we have throughout the city. So we'll be asking for a stormwater ballot and really change how we do that utility. We haven't changed it since 1993. That's a long time. And that model really only exists here. The industry has changed, and we want to adapt and best practices and change how we do it. It also includes an increase, of course. So there's a funding gap right now of $3.3 million annually for the work we need to do. Right now, the funding is so low, we can only deal with infrastructure failures. So when holes open up in the street, we have the money to go fix that, but we don't have the money to be proactive and go keep those holes from occurring. So that's where we're at, and we'd like to change to become more proactive. And finally, we want to ask to renew the ballot which funds our capital improvement program. So we often call it the capital improvement sales tax. This is the tax which in the past has funded fire trucks, fire station remodeling, new fire stations. We're going to propose roads and sidewalks are also a critically important piece of it. This tends to be the maintenance side of fixing roads, where the other ballot is about new roads. So this one, moving forward, the real innovation here is this fourth bullet, where we want to add police precincts in a municipal service center approach. For lack of a better word, we're calling it that, but the idea is simple, is that we co-locate city functions together in a way to save expense and perhaps gain some efficiency, effectiveness. So, for example, the fire department has always operated this way. They have 9 stations spread around the city, and they maximize their effectiveness that way. They can get to the caller as quickly as possible. We've never had that approach with the police department, it's a function of history that we only have one office for the police department. So this concept is, well, let's try to make three offices. Let's put one on the north side, one on the south side, keep the one in the center of town. And so when we do that, we'll want to co-locate. We want to have the police station next to the fire station, maybe put a salt dome on the south side next to that, have a fueling station so our field work can happen without having to drive all the way across town to fuel up or to get more salt when we're plowing snow. So it's a real effectiveness efficiency proposal we're pretty excited about. So those are the ballots. That's one way we're going to try to address those main challenges we talked about earlier. We all want to move into now and talk about the impact on customers or citizens. All of this can be found in the budget in brief, and so all of this is now online as well. So please take advantage of those resources. I will overview it here. We don't propose in this budget a sales tax or property tax increase. And what I mean by that is this budget isn't dependent on any of those ballots being successful. So we don't count our eggs before they hatch, right? So the budget's made without that. It does not propose to increase sales tax or property tax, although we will be asking to do that. Utility rate increases, we do have some of those. The average impact is $4.26 a month. For electric, that's a 2% operating increase. If you remember, we didn't increase electric at all last year. And again, that was an attempt to help the community really climb out of the recession. I think it did help. Unfortunately, we also had a beautiful year weather-wise, which means they lose money in the electric utility. So they did lose money, and now we're in a boat where we have to, we really have to increase that. And then sewer is related to a voter-approved ballot, so that's the 6% increase from that. We're also proposing to increase parking rates, $5 a month for surface lots, and a $5 increase in our parking meter violations. This will really go to fund three new police department positions. So we'll talk a little more about that in a second. Another big change, which was recommended by the Parking Task Force last year, was to change our hours of enforcement from 8 to 6 to 9 to 7 to more closely reflect when people are actually parking. So we are recommending we adopt that proposal. We are also going to increase a whole series of community development fees. That's really to help fund a few positions in CD. They are stretched very thin with the amount of development that's happening, the amount of rental inspections we need to do, the amount of building and site inspections we need to do. So fee increases to pay for those positions, parks and rec fee increases, and various utility fee increases for the things you see here: system equity in water, connection fees in sewer, and solid waste. We lose money on the commercial and the CID side, and the landfill is probably the cheapest landfill rate in mid-Missouri, so we're proposing to catch up on those elements. That's sort of the things we're going to increase. Now I want to talk about things that are far more interesting to most people, and the things that I am profoundly proud about as well, and that's our customer service enhancements. This is the number one most important thing in the council's strategic plan. Comes first. Now, all of them are important, and they're not in priority order, but customer service really pervades everything we do. It's the reason the city government exists, is to provide public service. So we need to be great at it. And this is an example where we have really stepped up our game. So Transit and Como Connect, a little over a week from now, we will start Como Connect, August 4th. We're so excited about it. We're going to make it free for the entire month of August for everyone. So we want everyone to come ride the bus and try the new routes. We have changed where we go and how often we circle and where we connect. So we can reach more of the city, more of the day than we've ever been able to do before. We have a new $3 daily pass we're excited about. You know, before you would pay for each ride, right? It was a buck and a half, I think, per ride, or $2. No one usually had quarters, right? So you have to overpay, and the driver can't give change, and it was a little bit of a mess. Or you have to pay for a whole month, you know. And a lot of folks find that a stretch. And so we feel like this is going to serve us kind of a sweet spot in our customer demand. So $3, you can ride all day, as many rides as you want. Another massive innovation, it takes a little bit of money to do this, but we are proposing to make it free to ride all year long for anyone 18 and under. They just have to show their school ID, and they can ride the bus all year for free. So free at the fare box for K through 12. And under kindergarten has always been free, so we're sort of expanding that program to everyone in school up to and through high school. We also have the Double Map app, and I encourage everyone to get that. It works really well. You can see where the bus is and how long it's going to be before it gets to your stop. It also helps you plan your trips. We will be embracing the Google Maps technology, so you'll be able to chart a path from where you are to where you want to be through walking and the bus and biking and the car. You can pick whichever of those you want to do, and Google will help you do it, and you'll be able to, it'll tell you, get on this bus at this time, take it to this location, get off. So it's going to be a great increase in our service level. We are providing free public classes about this new system. Any change like this is complicated. I don't know if you've tried to read the Como Connect map, but unless you're a bus user, it kind of looks confusing for the first reader. So we understand that, and we're providing classes to help anyone who wants to figure out how to read those maps. Once you get it, it seems easy. But when you look at it the first time, it looks pretty intimidating. And you can now purchase passes online at comoconnect.org. So I encourage everyone to do that. Another big improvement in our customer service effort is the contact center. I'm very excited about the service line, and it's a quiet but effective tool. And we've started handling solid waste calls. We're going to this year take on street issues, and what that really equates to is we're taking the highest volume calls per phone number that come to the city, and we're taking now the second highest volume of calls we receive with streets. And these folks are the contact center. They are advocates for community members who call. So we wanted to avoid the scenario where you have the phone mail jail. You know, have you ever called and, you know, press one if you want this, press two if you want that, and they never say what it is you want, so you don't know what to press. So you keep hitting zero to try to get a person. I'm assuming you know what I'm talking about. We've rejected that. So what we're trying to do here is if you call the city, you're going to get a real person who can actually answer the question you have or help you with the service you want to receive. And they are advocates for the caller and help you navigate the bureaucracy. So really excited about that service line. It will take on more and more phone numbers. The city government has 154 phone numbers in the phone book. And so good luck trying to find the right one, right? So the contact center's purpose is to take that down to three phone numbers, 911, 411, and everything else. So it will take time to get there, but that is our trajectory. And additionally, we really want to make an effort to communicate directly with everyone in the community, and that's hard to do. Not everyone subscribes to cable. Not everyone subscribes to the newspaper. And in fact, fewer and fewer each year do either of those. So we know we only reach a certain number of people through radio. We've done surveys and find that you know, quite honestly, old-fashioned U.S. mail is our best bet to reach everyone. So we will be sending our annual performance report, that's the state of the city, combined with the citizen handbook. We wanted to make that a little more meaningful and useful for everyone. So we're going to print that and mail it to every household in the community. It will be our one attempt to communicate to absolutely everyone. So I'm very excited about that initiative. Other investments we're going to make. Road resurfacing is the number one demanded service by the public in every survey we've done. And so we have nearly doubled or over doubled our resurfacing budget over the last 3 years, 4 years now. So we're going to have 43 street resurfacing projects in this year. You've probably already seen some of these. Fairview Road is a great example. King Street is going to happen. So in 15, we propose increasing street maintenance funding again by another $200,000. We're able to do that because of the revenue we're receiving from the Columbia Energy Center. One downside I have to report is that it's now taking us even longer to get through our whole portfolio of streets. A lot of concrete streets came into our maintenance portfolio this year where they didn't need maintenance before. They do now. They've reached the age where we have to go fix them. And they're just significantly more expensive to repair, basically resurface, than asphalt is. So our cycle time dropped from 48 years to 52 years. And that means that's how long it would take us to resurface every street in the city with the current funding. So we're doing what we can to grow that funding, but we are losing ground. The great news I will share with you, if we can go back just one, is that there was a 10% increase in citizen satisfaction. That is rare in city government, to have any increase in satisfaction, but to have a 10-point jump in one cycle of the survey is really unheard of, and we're particularly proud of that. And it pays off because we have listened to the public. They've said we want roads more than anything. We have put new money into that service, and we see the benefit and increased resident satisfaction. And then moving into the final stretch here, one of the other big strategic priorities of the City Council was workforce. We went through the recession and we survived it by not giving raises, and we really fell behind the marketplace. We have begun to start losing employees to the private sector because our pay is simply below what the market pays by a significant amount. So we did a classification compensation plan study. We basically changed our philosophy about how we pay employees to something more modern. And that has required a number of changes. One is we have to bring people up to at least the market minimum. So we every year check, have any of our jobs dropped below the market? Are we paying less than the lowest market, you know, benchmark? If we are, we raise that group of employees to that minimum. Then we look to the midpoint. Our philosophy is if you've worked in a job for 5 years, you should be earning the midpoint of the scale. And so what we find is we have many employees who aren't there. They're still being paid the minimum, right, because we didn't have raises for a few years. So what that resulted in this year is 420 employees will receive a move to minimum. 302 will receive this a bit of a pay bump. We won't get them all the way to the mid-range, but we'll get them 20% of the way to the midpoint. And then we're also recommending a 2% across-the-board raise for all employees. That's the first time we've been able to do that in 5 years, is my understanding, certainly in my tenure, four of those years. This is my fourth budget. This is the first time we've been able to do an across-the-board percentage-based increase. So we're very pleased about that, and that's an indicator that the recession really is behind us. So finally, you can find the budget on the website. Our website is www.gocolumbiamo.com and look under the financial reports link. There is a hard copy. We're going to have it in City Hall and the Finance Department. And then, most importantly, we are going to have multiple opportunities for the public to come and engage about the budget, share their views, and four opportunities for the council to adjust anything in the budget. So first one, August 18th. Saturday, then, August 23rd, is an all-day budget work session for the City Council. September 2nd, September 15th, all in this room. And those are all public hearings, although the budget work session really isn't, but I know that we will accept public comment. So with that, I think we've reached the end of our presentation, and I'll entertain questions. Yes? So the question was, if I could summarize what our mantra was as we entered the budget, and I will tell you it was really the council's strategic goals that guided us throughout. So we started with a council retreat. We talked about the strategic plan. We talked about specific goals. An example there is transit. One of the things that is in this budget because of that retreat is this idea of allowing 18 and under residents to ride for free. So we found a way to pay for that on the staff side. We're recommending how we do that in this budget. So that's an example of how the conversation in March has resulted in a budget impact here in July. So the mantra really is, we're beginning to recover from the recession. What is the unfinished business we need to accomplish? And then how do we move forward on our strategic plan goals? The question is there any worry that we're throwing too much at taxpayers right now? Absolutely. That has been a primary concern of council for, at least I will say the last 3 years while I've been here. It didn't seem to bother any of the other taxing jurisdictions, and so they've all been successful. And, if you look at what's on the ballots now, there are more out there. So, yes, it's a concern, and that is precisely why we're looking at, our mix, our portfolio of revenue. And we have, we've really not done anything with property tax, and we've heavily emphasized the sales tax. We're concerned that we're reaching a threshold with sales tax that's negative, so we're looking toward the property tax for that. And that's precisely, we don't want to get into the MoDOT scenario where you have a gas tax that ends up failing you, and you can't accomplish your mission. So I will, they have tried to adjust. They've asked for a different method of funding. We're doing something similar with the property tax. Yes?
You mentioned the police department.
Mm-hmm.
And then what would it
be? So the question was, explore this comment about the police department being 30% underfunded, and what would it mean if the ballot doesn't pass? It is always the community's decision whether we, have these resources or not, and so we will always respect the voters. Of course, we have to, and we do anyway. That's why we're in this business. So if they vote no, we simply move on the way we are now. And I will tell you, we have had to adjust our policing approach, and many people find that a negative change. And what I mean is, we don't do reports on traffic accidents. It takes too long, and there's no value, from our view, of a police report for a traffic accident. It's all a civil matter, right? It's between insurance companies and individuals. There's no crime that was committed necessarily. So we do that if there's been an injury. So that's one example where we're scaling back what we do because we don't have time. The staffing level has shrunk in comparison to the city over the last 10 years, and that's because the city grows and the staffing level didn't. So the number of calls we receive has grown, and our ability to respond has not. So we have to prioritize calls. I'll give you an example of this. We were meeting to talk about what we're going to do about this, about the ballot. And that was at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday. So 10 a.m. on Tuesday, we had what we call status zero, meaning there were no patrol officers to respond to any calls coming in. Now, we hate being in that situation, but it happens very often now. And so luckily at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday, generally there's not a lot going on. But I'll tell you, if you call us about fireworks, it's not important, right? We are not going to respond immediately to that call. We will respond, but it's going to get prioritized at the bottom of the list of everything else we're doing. So that's why it will take us 3-4 hours to get to a restaurant that has a rowdy customer that's abusing verbally the other residents, or a fireworks call, or that sort of thing. We have to prioritize, and we are very often at status zero. All 20 officers on duty are busy. There's two other things we're going to propose to do, you know, especially if it doesn't pass, but we may need to do this anyway. One is seems like a smart thing to me anyway. With the new technology, gas stations can avoid drive-offs. Right, that's where people fuel up and then drive off without paying. There's a high volume of that still occurs. And it only occurs at the gas stations that don't require you to pay first, right? So those credit card machines you have to pay at the pump, you pay before you gas up. Or the other way to do it, if you don't want to pay for that technology, is just require people to come inside and pay and then let them fuel up. So that's an easy one to avoid a lot of police calls. Another one is shoplifting. Believe it or not, we have an immense number of calls from Walmart and every other high volume store where someone will steal $5 worth of merchandise, and we'll spend 2 hours of a cop's time driving out there filling out a report. And they already have their property back by the time we get there. So it's one of those things that's a very low value time for a police officer. We might simply say that we're not going to respond unless it's more than $100 or something. So that's actually common now throughout the country. That's sort of a nationwide phenomenon where the recession really hit police departments hard. We're lucky that we didn't have to lay off half of our police force like many cities in California. But we are still very low staffing levels. The average is about 2 officers per 1,000 residents. We're at 1.4, I think, now. I certainly feel that way. That question was, would I classify staffing levels as critical? It's what depends on what's important to you. If you want someone to come when you call, we can't do that right now on every case. We have to prioritize. Now, you want us to prioritize, right? If it's violent crime, we're going to go. And if it's a fire, we're going to go. And so we do have situations where we have to call in help from others. Fire does this routinely. We call that mutual aid. And it doesn't happen every day, but when we need it, it's there, and we call on it. The police department has been doing a masterful job limping through this low staffing level. We have called these efforts saturation efforts. And we call them that because we go out and do some very proactive policing, but we could not do it without the help of the federal government. And I'm talking multiple agencies that supply staff to help us. They're out in the field with us. The Highway Patrol has assisted, and we even cooperate with the Sheriff's Department to have some of their help. So, our staffing level is so low we can't do that on our own. And we have multiple incidents where we're at status zero. So for me, that's, I would love to perform at a higher level. As the city manager, I would love to give the community a higher level of service than we're able to do. I'm very pleased with the department's quality of service. When they get there, they do a fantastic job. We catch the bad guys. But we are stretched very thin. It's like having way too little butter over too much bread, right? And so we feel it's time to ask, and the council has responded with a willingness to put it on the ballot. Of course, it's up to the voters, and we will muddle through if they say no, and if they say yes, we will begin to improve. Other questions? Well, we'll just share the facts. The facts speak for themselves, I think. And people will decide whether they support that question or not. And each of these questions they'll answer are separate services we provide and separate facts. So the case to be made for the police and fire department staffing level is very simple. You know, it's not a complicated question. You get into stormwater. That's definitely something people don't think about very often. Depending on where you live, there are some people who think about it every time it rains because of flooding. So, you know, these are things we're being responsive to the community about. Believe it or not, we haven't just sat around and thought up, how can we put another ballot on, right? These are service lines that we have postponed fixing because of the recession. And now the demand for these fixes is actually coming from the public. And that's reflective of, I think, the council's, for example, getting behind the mayor now on this issue. And at our last work session, it was a unanimous support to put this on the agenda for the council to vote on. The CPOA is 100% behind this. You'll remember they weren't last year. They have looked at it in detail, and they are supportive now. So I think that year was good in the sense it gave a lot of people a chance to really look at it. And, you know, the shots fired incidents keep it top of mind. We are having fewer shots fired incidents, believe it or not. It doesn't feel that way when they happen. But those are we're having fewer of those. And that's, I think, due in direct response to our saturation efforts. So all of those things added together, I think the time has enabled us to bring people together around this issue and show them the facts. You know, we're an open book, this organization. So we have let anyone who has an interest in to see how it works and what our challenges are. Yeah, the question is, just to clarify, the saturation efforts are a defined geographic area where we intensify the number of law enforcement officers we put on the street so that they can have a better impact. And the answer is yes, that's precisely it. And they, because we have the amount of humans on the street that we need, they can do enforce all of the laws, right? Whereas if you're really struggling, which we do, we have to prioritize and go to the worst crimes that are currently occurring. They get to look at all of them, and so they're able to find things like someone's not got a license plate. So let's talk to them. Oh, we pull them over. Look, I get their ID. They're a felon, and there's a weapon in the car. Well, we just kept a crime from happening. Now, you can never prove that, right? How do you prove you kept something from happening? But we know we did, and those are the kind of impacts we're having, and it has resulted. There are fewer shots fired this year than there were last year, so we're pleased about that impact. Other questions? All right, well, thank you all very much for coming. And again, you can see this on the web if you're really bored, and you can get the document by clicking on the link. Thanks very much.